Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome to the USCBI Task Force. Of the members, we have our two co-chairs, Christina Caraballo, Terry O'Malley. We also have Stephen Lane, Valerie Gray, and Sasha Termot. Are there any other task force members on the phone that have joined? Okay, we'll circle back as others will probably join a little bit later. Terry and Christina, I'll hand it over to you for today's agenda.
Great.
Great.
Christina, do you have any opening remarks? Otherwise, I'll make some.
Go ahead and kick us off, I think. Perfect.
Okay. So thanks again, everybody on the phone, for all the help in moving this along. This is our anti-penultimate meeting to take off what Stephen said for the ISP task force. So we have one more meeting after this before we have to present on the 16th. So today we've got pretty packed list of issues to go over. The first couple of slides in the deck, so we'll go through the agenda pretty quickly, send me a quick overview, and then we're basically going to discuss issues that were raised either at HITAC or since that meeting. And the next slide, please. So we all kind of know what the overarching goals are. Again, it's the tension between a public process, making it easy to submit data elements, and a highly technical process for specification and maturing the data elements so they're ready for national exchange. Next slide, please. We kind of know what we've done, but we've agreed with ONC's proposed advancement promotion model. And now we're making sort of tweaks to that model and to the process that we think might work for ONC. And next slide, please. So this is just a quick rundown of the process at a very high level. And I won't read it to everybody. And then finally, the next slide, please. So this is sort of the meat of our discussion today. It's these 10 or 9 issues that have been raised. Some of them have been raised with some proposed additional language, which will make it easy for us to discuss, and we can discuss the language. Some are more broad and have we're going to need some more discussion. So this is the list. So the issues that were raised were, what do we do with non-advancing data elements? How are data elements prioritized, and who knows what that is? Is the technical maturity assessment rigorous enough, and do we need to manage that? How do the submitters and the stewards and the interested parties provide feedback throughout the process? Question that Ken has raised is sort of, who's going to do all the standards work and the testing and specifying that are needed? And then sort of the issues around the timeline just being too long, and whether or not there's better certainty that we can provide to industry around data elements that have made it to level 2 and their likelihood of advancing to USCDI. Harmonizing data elements that are similar when they're proposed. And then sort of a general issue of, what do we do with really big data classes that are going to require, that have lots of data elements in them, and do we need to think about a different or special process for those? And then let me pause here and just ask the group if there's anything else we ought to add to this list that strikes them.
Well, I think the question about large data classes is a good one. You know, we've been interacting with a number of folks, you know, who clearly have large data classes to propose. You know, the whole discussion with the AMA around referral content, social determinants of health. There's a lot of data classes there. You know, then we met with the group talking about transplant. You know, so we really probably are talking about having large groups or large numbers of elements being brought forward together, and I think it does behoove us to think about how those will be managed.
Great. Yep. Thanks, Stephen. Any other nominees for this list?
Well, I guess the other thing that's come up, Terry and Christina, you know, and we've shared some emails about it, but we haven't really talked about it here, is this, you know, this acknowledgement that there's a very broad space between USCDI version 1 as proposed and, quote, all electronic health information, and the idea of whether, you know, this group and or ONC should be considering some intermediate milestone or data set definition that could be referenced in rulemaking, perhaps in some of those situations where, you know, as much as we'd like to be able to exchange or unblock all EHI, that might not be technically feasible. So I think I'm still kind of waiting to hear from Steve and Elise about the proposal that I forwarded them, but I think that's something we should just keep in mind in our discussions.
Great. So we'll add that to the list, and hopefully we'll have a chance to have everyone weigh in on it. Christina, do you have like to add stuff?
No, I agree with Stephen. I think that we've discussed that quite a bit, and I would like to add it to the list, but we can move right in now. We've got a lot to get through today.
Okay. All right. Any other comments?
This is Sasha. Just one thing I know we've discussed, and I don't know if we need to discuss it again because I'm not sure we're the right people to answer it, but repeatedly it's come up. What does clarifying the confusion around the role of USCDI? So we've talked about its incorporation and certification means that certified products would capture these data elements, but as we think of data elements that would go outside the realm of certification, what's sort of the role of USCDI there? And then also reconciling the challenge that not all data elements are equally applicable to all the domains that we might start to exchange in, and how do we deal with the ambiguity of what types of systems need to support capture, what types of systems need to support receipt and display, but maybe wouldn't capture natively. You know, certain things might be barcoded in a surgical setting and need to be viewable in inpatient or post-acute care settings, but would never be captured in the same way in a long-term care facility as they might be in, you know, at the OR. And that's a complexity that has come up in our conversation, but I don't know that that's fully resolved either.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll just echo that. I think you make a really good point, Sasha. You know, the notion that, you know, we've identified elements or discussed elements where we've said, you know, if you capture it, you should send it, you know, as opposed to you must capture it and send it. So I think that the notion of domain-specific or use-case-specific elements that are different than things that we would purely expect everyone to do.
Okay. we're definitely going to need next week's meeting. But anyway, great comment and good thoughts. Thank you, Sasha and Stephen. Okay, let's jump in. And Sasha is the author of the first four of these items, I believe. And so maybe, so we have the next slide, please. So Sasha, do you want to sort of take us through this?
Yep.
Okay.
So some of this, I think, was discussed in the sort of timeout of elements that haven't progressed fully through the process. But when I shared our draft materials with some of my colleagues to make sure I was recruiting other stakeholder expert opinions to reflect here, they weren't clear on exactly how that was going to work and worried that if there was a buildup of material in level one or level two, it would make it harder for everyone to use. Harder to find if your idea has already been submitted, harder to provide feedback on the ideas that have been submitted, harder to provide input on, oh, I've been piloting this, or I'd like this suggestion, or whatever those pieces are. And so their suggestion was just to make sure that it's clear what the pruning process is. Time-based was, I think, one of the ones that we had talked about previously, like after three cycles, if it hasn't progressed, we would take it out. And just make sure that that was clear and then fair, of course. Don't want it to be inappropriately removing things that should be still considered, but we want to keep the whole list manageable for all the stakeholders.
Okay. Okay, and you proposed, so you added a bunch of bullet points that we should probably discuss around this issue. All right, so the first being, it's really two kinds of evaluation. One is time-based, and I guess they're related. So it's really going to be time-based, because if you're not advancing in technical maturity, you're going to run the clock out on your cycles. So, and we talked about three cycles being adequate or a reasonable length of time to give elements to advance, and if they fail to advance to the next level within three cycles, that they kind of go back to the beginning. They don't disappear, but they go into a new space. We'll probably have to label that. Any other thoughts about the process? And Sasha, were you concerned that wasn't specific enough, that they weren't going to be kicked out of the process, but they were going to be put into a waiting room?
I think the three cycles proposal is fine. I think my colleagues just didn't see that in some of the materials that I shared with them for review. So maybe we just want to make sure that it's clear, it's part of our recommendations. And I don't know if we're making a report like the ISP task force, or if our format is different. Like what's going to be the end format we come up with?
Yeah, I think we're going to make a series of recommendations, and we will probably have the HITECH vote on one or grouped recommendations that seem to be linked. I think it's going to be a formal process again.
Three cycles seems reasonable to me, I guess, with the caveat that it will depend somewhat on how many classes are participating in the process. If 2 years into this, we realize that there's several thousand data classes lingering for years at a time, and it's muddying the waters, it might be prudent to revisit and say, look, two cycles is sufficient to advance. We have to keep this, clearer.
Okay.
This is Clem, and I couldn't get on before. The other challenge is that if people break the submissions into teeny little bitty pieces, it's going to drown the system. So, if they said they just want device categories, or they want, something, and it could reference some source, it wouldn't be as hard to work it through. But I think it's going to be really hard if you get millions of them and they're little bitty things that have to be discussed separately.
Yeah, it's a good point, Clem. We really have the two ends of the two extremes. One is lots of tiny little discrete data elements, you know, millions of them, and versus several really huge data sets, data classes, and sort of what's that, A, what does it do to the system, and what does it do to the vendors, to the people who have to implement? And we have
But some of them will be easy. The size won't necessarily determine their difficulty, but it certainly could. So, for example, what if we didn't have things like we have now, and someone said, well, let me give a good example. What if we want to add ICD-11 as an option for diagnoses? And that's conceivable. It would be relevant. Well, it's not going to be a matter of inspecting every single code. So the bigger ones, if they are systematic and come from a source, a well-defined source, may or may not be hard. That's all.
Okay.
Okay.
But they'll have to be systematic and come from a well-defined source.
Yeah. We hope a lot of them has a place, you know, some reference for it that they, you don't have to guess what they really mean. But yeah, let's just put it on the table. I don't know if there's any action we can take with that.
Okay. All right. No, that's great. Group, any further thoughts on this? Are we okay just going back and adding a little more clarity to this declaration? And we'll put it in a new bullet for review next week.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be easily automatable. This is sort of like what you need a judge, or you need some wise organization to kind of make decisions. Because if the flow is too fast and too big, it will harm, people won't be able to keep up, including ANC, who has to review them. So.
Right. And then the flip side, if it's too slow, no one's going to be happy.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. So we're in the middle. Okay. All right. So let's move on with this. We will make the edits per our discussion. Could we have the next slide, please? Okay. Sasha, you're back up again.
All right. So, again, this is a little bit, I think my colleagues and I were uncertain how many data elements were going to end up in each level. We could anticipate, given some of the examples we've talked about in the work group so far, that there could be a really large quantity of data classes or elements that are ready to go into USCDI, but that we need to prioritize into the industry so that we don't overwhelm health IT developers or providers with just like too large of a bolus all at once. And so it seemed like there could be an element of promotion process that says, if there's only a small number that need to promote, then no need for this prioritization. But that if there is at one given time a large bolus, how would we divide them up to say, okay, these ones first, these ones second, these ones third, et cetera?
Okay, and any further thoughts or comments, folks? Then we can go through the bullets. So the issue of prioritization certainly is an important one. And as Sasha, as you reference here, some of the elements in the USCDI / HITACH end of this process, sort of at least hint at a way of prioritizing, but aren't perhaps explicit enough. So it's
We thought some of the strategic considerations, sort of scope of applicability, quality of the use cases and workflows in terms of their relevance to that element. All of those could definitely be factors that would influence the prioritization. It wasn't totally clear to us which group would do that, if that's something that the HITACH would do or that ONC would do or how.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably going to be one or the other of those two. So I guess any thoughts as a group on where that can be best done?
Well, again, you got to be Solomon for some of these things. I think I would throw it to Ankh to have him to be judge, you know, reasonable judgment. Because when you write a law, you end up with the judges. I mean, you have the judicial system decide the difficult things. We kind of have to throw it out. We can't program it, I don't think.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Maybe the question is, you know, do we throw it to HITACH or do we throw it to ONC to do the first prioritization cut?
So we had in our recommendations so far thought that the HITACH would review as a first step and then make recommendations to ONC, and then ONC would make the decision. So all the data elements that are ready, the HITACH would evaluate, make recommendations to ONC, and ONC would make the final recommendations. That's what's in our current drafts of things right now.
Right. So I guess, which of the two choices that we have do we think would be more appropriately placed to make that prioritization decision, HITACH or ONC? Okay. Hearing none.
So I guess just thinking it through, HITACH is good when you need breadth of stakeholder representation, right? That's a quality of HITACH that ONC is not necessarily able to offer to the same degree. So if that is an important factor to prioritization, then I could see it being an important role for HITACH. If the prioritization process, like the factors we think are important, are more quantifiable and about the readiness of the standard and its degree to which it's met the qualifying metrics, then that seems like something that ONC could do without necessarily relying on the breadth of stakeholder representation that HITACH would represent. So that would be how I would think about it. My sense is that we could come up with quantifiable metrics to prioritize, but if it's hard to do that at this point, or we think that the stakeholder representation is important, then that would tip me towards thinking HITACH was the place to do it.
Mm-hmm. I think we had a discussion a while back about sort of whose priorities, and, you know, is there a body either within or related to ONC that has the breadth of overview of the data needs to promote the quadruple aim, you know, across government, across industry, where high value data classes could be identified and prioritized. As an example, pregnancy status, because we now have a Zika epidemic. No, it's that sort of use case specific types of prioritization.
I mean, I personally think that HITACH is a good forum for this sort of thing, and that I could see this becoming kind of a standing agenda item at HITACH. You know, now we're going to do our USCDI work. I mean, we are the HIT Advisory Committee, after all. If they wanted to keep a task force alive to do that, or a working group, that would be fine. But, you know, it doesn't seem like a misuse of HITACH's time and energy.
Well, let me take a slightly counter view that it's not a misuse for sure, but is there the capacity, you know, how many hours a week can people spend on this? It seems like the HITACH would be better off reviewing the process that operational organization decided. I think we'd better off reversing it so that Ankh would make some suggestions and we could change them. So we're going to have to do so much groundwork. We're not an operational unit.
Interesting. That's an interesting way to look at it, Clint. So you're saying ask ONC to come up with the draft prioritization and HITACH react to that draft.
We could still get the same amount of influence control, but it wouldn't be as much labor. I mean, total hours.
Okay. What do folks think of that approach? So flipping it, instead of HITACH to ONC, do it ONC to HITACH back to ONC.
I have a question on that. Are we talking about the prioritization model or actually, reviewing the recommendations for moving forward?
I tell the time with the actual operational recommendation, how we do it in real life. If it wasn't that, then I'm dropping my suggestions at relevant.
Yeah, it's all of those data elements that have met all the criteria for USCDI, but need the final review by HITACH ONC to be officially designated. So it's that sort of step in the process. And so we're asking is, in that final step, what's the best way to prioritize the current candidate data elements so that we, on the one hand, so that we avoid overwhelming industry by having a bolus that can't be digested?
Terry, this is Val. I guess I just want to make sure I understand. By the time you get sort of ready for the USCDI, it's sort of like a funnel, right? Like there's a whole bunch of stuff that comes in the beginning and it keeps getting whittled down. So wouldn't this be a relatively small set of data for us to sort of prioritize, or maybe I'm misunderstanding?
No, that's a good point, and I think no one knows. The original ONC estimates were that there'd be thousands of comments submitted. There'd be hundreds of data elements in level one. There might be a couple of dozen and that made it to level two, and of those, half are going to get through for final consideration to USCDI at any one time. Rough estimates, but I don't think anyone knows how this system is going to work or what the volume is going to be.
Oh, sorry. It might also vary over time, too, right? I think right now we're hearing a lot of interest in getting more stuff into USCDI, which might lead to a large initial bolus, which then would even out over time after we've addressed backlog, for example.
Yeah, good point. So Val, does that help with sort of where we are in the process?
It does. Thank you.
Yeah. So what do we think? HITACH reviews an ONC list or ONC reviews a HITACH list?
Are we voting?
Well, yeah, more or less. Again, it's Clem's point about HITACH workload, but with the benefit of a really broad stakeholder base. Now, so where do you want to put that broad stakeholder base, up front or, second place? So who wants to do HITACH to ONC? Any groundswell for that approach?
Well, again, I'd argue no, because we don't have enough workers kind of prepare this stuff for us.
Okay. So, Clem, you're the advocate for the next, which is ONC to HITACH for review. How about comments on ONC to HITACH as the proposed path? Are we okay with that?
Yeah. I think my suggestion is we're recommending a prioritization model, and then ONC is executing on it. So what you're asking is that we participate in the execution, and that's what I was trying to clarify before. I don't think I would say we should participate in execution, because I see us as potentially, you know, something that's going to slow the process down.
And so your preference is? Do you have a preference for the model, for the process?
My preference for the process is that we create the criteria by which the things that come in can go through the model more quickly versus, being the stopgap to get those items into approved standards. Because that's what I hear you saying. And again, that's what I was trying to clarify. Maybe I heard you wrong, but it sounded like you're saying that we would look at the list of elements that are looking to be promoted. And I don't know if that's really the role we should have.
So this is a
standards making organization. And I think we're supposed to be recommending what the standards and the models should be that all of those executors should follow rather than be in the execution process itself.
So this becomes like an ongoing circle, because we've got it's going to be, I believe, published annually. So what if ONC publishes a draft, puts it up for public comment, and then HITACH reviews that draft as well, makes recommendations.
Exactly. I think that's the process we follow today, and that's what we should be recommending.
Other folks, does that address people's concerns?
Can you restate that option? Was it the same as option two, Clem's choice, or slightly different?
I'll leave that for Christina. So it's...
Yeah,
it's
so...
go ahead.
Taking into consideration kind of Clem's concerns, it would be the ONC publishes the draft of USCDI based on an annual basis, or the ready elements, data elements that are ready and under consideration because they've made it through the whole process. And maybe that's a whole list of everything that's ready, and then puts it out for public comment. And then the HITACH reviews that same document that's out for public comment and makes recommendations to give back to ONC. And then the way I was thinking about it, then ONC would publish the final updated USCDI based on public comment and HITACH recommendations. And that seems to follow a similar process that we do now.
So that sounds like a variant of process number two, just a little clearer one.
And Cheryl can sign on to that. I would agree with that.
Okay. Anybody else with an allergy to that approach?
No, I think it makes sense.
Okay, good. All right, so as it is written, so it shall be. Right? Okay, we wish. Could we? Okay, great. So next slide, please. There we go. Okay, so we're all done with Sasha's really clear questions and proposed answers. So this came about as a potential solution to the long time lag between being submitted as a comment before you get to USCDI. And one of the proposals was you could shorten that time if it was clear that data elements that made it to level two had a high probability of getting into USCDI. Presumably, industry would be more willing to pick those up on spec, given the fact that they're likely to go forward. So that's sort of the subtext. So I guess the bunch of questions come up around that. Is that a realistic expectation that industry would do something that had a potential of not being making it to USCDI, pick up a data element that might not? Or is industry more likely just to wait until everything gets to USCDI and that this approach is not going to significantly shorten cycle time? So I'd be interested in the vendor community about sort of whether that's an approach that's worth pursuing.
Yeah. So this is Sasha, and I discussed with some coworkers, and we talked about some past examples of programs where there's foreshadowing of requirements. It's a challenging thing. There's kind of a trade-off between the certainty of the foreshadowing. For example, if there are, 10 things and routinely 9 or 10 of them become required later, then it's, rewarding to act based on that foreshadowing. If there's routinely 10 things and 2 or 3 of them become required later, it's not a good investment to act on that degree of foreshadowing. There's also going to be questions of sheer volume and prioritization. If there's 10 things that someone as a developer knows are required and they have only time to do 10 things right now, they're probably going to focus first on the 10 they know are required before they would get to the foreshadowed ones. And so depending on the balance of work in the certain bucket versus the balance of work in the foreshadowed bucket, if the certain bucket is large enough, no one will be get to the foreshadowed bucket regardless, right? Because you're still working on the highest confidence certain work in that other category. There's other factors that will, of course, influence it, such as feedback from users, the utility of that particular data element or class to the product or service being offered by the person. Obviously, many types of HIT systems include many data classes and elements that are not in USCDI today, which they've done based on user feedback and other reasons. And so those would continue to be factors as people looked at the foreshadowing piece. So I think if the quantity that's required are manageable and people have time to go beyond the bare minimum of the requirements into things that are coming in the future, and the things that are coming in the future are predicted with high enough confidence over time that people can trust that if it's in that bucket, it's really going to happen, I would wisely invest now by looking ahead, then people will do it. But in the past, a lot of times when we see foreshadowing things, I'm thinking of, CMS publishes a future quality measures under consideration list, for example, or other tools like that where they show, hey, here's what we're thinking about. A lot of those are tools that people look at and monitor closely, but they don't necessarily represent the degree of confidence that everyone wants to move ahead with development because they have historically shown a degree of flux on either the eventual requirement of those items or the timing on which those end up being required that mean that people prioritize otherwise. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me. Yeah. Any further thoughts from folks? That's a very nice summary, Sasha. Thank you. Unless someone has a strong contrary opinion, I think this one we can probably just put in the parking lot and come back to it when and if we have a better sense of what the volume through the final step of USCDI is. It doesn't sound like it should be our principal or one of several strategies to shorten the cycle time. People okay with that?
Terry, I didn't understand what you said. It doesn't seem what?
Based on what Sasha said, it's not clear that this is going to be a terribly effective way to shorten the cycle time.
Okay.
Am I giving industry greater confidence it's going to move forward? That's not the only issue that they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we put it in the parking lot and come back to it if and when we have a better sense of what the total volume is. And then at that point, maybe the equation is right and the foreshadowed list is and the to-do list are are somewhat better aligned, we might pick it up again. Dump. I'm just saying, let's drop this. Okay. Anyone? No? Okay. Let's drop it. Next slide, please. And this is another, this really goes to the sort of the submission process and sort of what are the things that ONC is going to have to do to make this process work well. And I think, and so this is one of the things that might be important to do in the process. Maybe get a sense of what people think about the idea of paying attention to harmonizing data elements that are similar or seem to, well, express similar concepts or are somehow related. Now, so the pros and cons of trying to have a parsimonious list of as few data elements as we can because they are more broadly applicable versus the need for sort of subtle granularity in some of the data sets, and whether a harmonization process would help. Clem had to sign off, but I have a feeling he would be weighing in on this.
Yeah, I think this is really important. The last thing we want is a lot of close to the same thing that end up leading to, you know, duplicative parallel processing. I think that once something gets into the process, that things that are close enough or closely related would be, you know, merged together and lead to some expansion within a given domain. And that in that way, people who come with sort of novel ideas or amendments, addenda to something that's already started, they don't have to start from the beginning, right? They can also benefit from the work that's already been done on a data class or an element by sort of extending it a bit as opposed to starting over.
Stephen, I'm trying to think of what sort of recommendations we could make to ONC about what that process might look like.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on?
Well, I don't know what the process would. I mean, there clearly needs to be that intake process, and I think we've mentioned this before, that when something is brought forward, be it an element or a class, that it be evaluated by someone, you know, presumably someone at ONC, to see how close it is to other things that are already in the process. And I think we just need to highlight the importance of that evaluation. And then there are going to be those where it's like, well, it's kind of like this, but not quite like this. And I guess there's going to need to be some criteria, you know, specified or otherwise, that they would be used to say, you know, this is close enough to push, you know, cram them together and try to move them through as a bundle, as opposed to this is different enough to warrant a separate process.
Okay, so in our submission process, we ask the submitter to review what's already in the public facing.
Right, but I don't think we can count on them to do that thoroughly.
Right.
We want to ask them for sure.
So you're suggesting then that on top of that, there should be
a secondary process, yeah,
that ONC uses to continually review the submissions and provide a grouping function.
Right.
Harmonization.
Grouping slash differentiating, right?
Right.
One of these things is not like the other.
You listen to that too, huh? All right. Yeah. Okay. So, thanks, Stephen. Anyone else have thoughts on that? Is that the way Stephen has formulated it makes sense? It makes sense. Does anyone agree? Everyone agree with it? Does anyone disagree with it? Or would like to change it? Okay. So we're going to propose then that ONC explicitly assumes the role of grouping and differentiating data elements submitted to this process.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. And it probably is going to have to be an ongoing process again, because the data elements may sort of coalesce into a data class, and that's likely to accrete over time, rather, or who knows what's going to happen. Is these going to accrete, or it's going to split, and then two separate data classes will accrete. But there's going to be an active process of grouping and differentiating data elements that probably is going to extend through level one. I would expect by the time you get to level two, you're pretty tight. Okay, so let's explicitly call out this function, say it's going to be at least through level one, and just make it an ONC function. Okay, great. Next one. Next slide, please. Okay. So this is the bulk data, the large data sets. And Stephen, you already raised that in the first part of the talk for our session. So I guess there are a couple of questions about this. So Clem was suggesting there are big data classes that if they are from a standardized source, that they, a reliable and standardized source, that they may not be that difficult for industry to absorb.
So, can I ask a clarifying question about this?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Sasha. Go ahead.
Perfect. So, when we say large data classes, I'm trying to think about this. So, like, preferred language is a data class, right?
Yeah.
And the current standard, I don't remember what it's called, but has hundreds or thousands of language choices. Would we consider that, because there are thousands of potential data elements, a large data class? The reason I give that example is that there's many hundreds or thousands of choices of language, but yet the values are all structurally similar, right? It's a word and a code, and then the workflow is very standardized for what you're doing with it. Preferred language is not varied that dramatically based on what the value that is put into the field is. And so even though there's thousands of choices or elements, I don't think of that as a large class. So I just wanted to make sure I understood what a large data class was.
Yeah, that's really important, because Clem was suggesting the same thing. The size may not be the issue. The issue may be how standard is it? How unambiguous is it? So there may be other criteria besides size.
Yes, right.
That are more important, although size will just multiply the difficulty. Sorry, excuse me.
I think there's other factors too. It have to do with the expectation. if the expectation is simply capture preferred language, the number of values that are being chosen from is irrelevant. If the expectation is, you know, provide educational materials in the preferred language, then the number of potential languages becomes critical to evaluating the feasibility.
Okay. So instead of focusing on size, should we use other...
I might say complex. I mean, I think really complex data elements, like thinking about medications as one example, where a single medication might have dozens or hundreds of metadata associated with it, and across the whole span of different types of medications, you have the complexity of administrations, dispenses, orders, history, over-the-counter. I mean, all of that complexity means that medications is, you know, highly varied if you compare it to an example like preferred language.
Yeah. I think that's getting more at what we're trying to say, and that is, right, so from industry standpoint, it's really the complexity of the data class rather than the size. And can we be explicit about or provide more examples for what makes it complex? So you already said metadata.
Yeah, metadata would be one factor. I think the sort of quantity and diversity of associated use cases. And so, you know, medications are complicated partly because the use cases of ordering, of administering in a hospital, of dispensing in a pharmacy, of determining the patient's payment, as we've been talking about recently, all those are very varied, and there's a lot of them.
Got it. Okay. All right, so maybe we amend this then to complex data elements, site, metadata, and the quantity and diversity of associated use cases. And then I guess the question is, okay, once we cite that, is there a special process for these, or do they just sort of go into the mill and sort of churn their way through the process?
I would like to flag them for the prioritization that we talked about, because it would be different if ONC proposes prioritizing 10 really complicated data classes versus 10 very simple data classes, right? So part of their prioritization will probably be to choose a parsimonious amount of complicated data classes and maybe a complementary amount of simple data classes for each promotion cycle.
Okay. So to use this then in the prioritization process. Okay.
Great.
Okay. Well, I think that's a great clarification. As a group,
hello?
Yep, I'm here. Terry got very
Terry
quiet.
Get disconnected?
I guess.
Are you on? Terry might have dropped.
Uh-oh.
So I'm wondering, with what you're saying, Sasha, the kind of the complementary between the harder to implement and the easier, if there aren't, and I don't know how I feel about this myself, but everything that's ready gets into USCDI, but then we have like different tags for how long you have to actually have it implemented within your system. Maybe Adam, you can help me here. I can't remember the lag time once it makes it into USCDI, how much time developers have. I think it was 2 years.
That's what's being proposed. This is Al. That is what it's being proposed once it becomes a new standard version.
And I don't know if we want to mess with that, but I hear one of the issues is that lack of certainty that something is actually going to make it into USCDI. But if it's in there, but it's just too much to handle at once, do we kind of incrementally give timelines to implement?
I think that could
but
be.
But you know it's in there.
I mean, I think if we were proposing a really, I mean, medications is already in USCDI, but let's say that was a proposal and it seemed that it would take more than the usual amount of time, it would be helpful to give a degree of certainty about its inclusion in USCDI with a longer time frame. I think then we'd have to be mindful in future cycles, right, that we still had that sort of pre-existing commitment out there and didn't overload it later. Does that make sense? I'm just thinking about the timing, yeah. Right? Because then the next year, if you put a whole bunch more stuff in that hit at the same deadline as the big thing that you'd already committed, it would defeat the purpose.
So what do others think? Does this make it overcomplicated or helpful?
Can you restate the proposal or suggestion?
Yeah, so one of the issues that we've identified is, or that there is a major concern, is that there will be a massive amount of data classes that are ready, and they'll kind of, they're ready, they've gone through the process. But as Sasha was just saying, some of them are really complicated to implement and some of them are easier. So there needs to be a balance.
From the vendor perspective.
From the vendor perspective. And so,
or from the provider perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. So,
hi, gang.
But
sorry.
There's also just that, hey, Terry.
Back again.
So let me... Let me back up and fill you in. So we were just discussing the kind of problem that we want. First of all, the industry wants reassurance that if they're going to start working on implementing a data class or data element, that it's actually going to be in USCDI. So that's one identified issue. Another issue is that we've got this kind of two sides, like really complex data classes to implement and then the easier ones, and trying to find a balance when things are brought into USCDI so that there's not overload on implementation. But what we were just discussing should we potentially put the data classes that are ready, despite the complexity, into USCDI, but then think about how long it's going to take for the industry to actually implement them. So right now, once it gets into USCDI, it's 2 years till it's required by regulation to be used. Do we consider tagging certain data classes as having a little bit longer of a timeline, but still put them in USCDI, just increasing kind of for the more complicated ones, the commitment that it's there, but enabling industry to adopt it.
You know, that's an interesting question, because, you know, when we talked to Steve about this, the idea was, you know, we just push things along into USCDI and then, and there are versions, right? So presumably it's like this whatever annual type process where, you know, now it's USCDI 3 and now it's USCDI 4. And then the rulemaking follows behind that, you know, a year or two or whatever, and says, you know, now you're required to be up to version 2 or version 3. I think the point is that the delta between versions can only be so big, or the delta between required versions, versions that are required by, you know, by rule, can only be so big, so that the industry can absorb the change. So I don't know that our job is to throttle things from getting into USCDI. I mean, I think, you know, we want that process to move along apace. And if, you know, if a constituency, you know, gets excited and puts a lot of time and energy into it and moves something along, they should, you know, have the credit of getting that into USCDI. And getting into USCDI is the flag to the developers that they're going to have to develop it. But then the question is, when are they going to have to deliver it? And how is that going to be rationally incorporated into everyone's development and delivery timelines? So I'm thinking out loud a bit, because I don't think the throttling should be in getting it into USCDI. I think the throttling should be in getting it into, getting it required by rules and regs, which is not a USCDI problem so much as a rulemaking problem. I don't know if I'm making sense. I feel like I'm rambling a little, but I'm struggling with this.
That's a fair point, Stephen. But I thought some of the requirements pointed straight to USCDI, like TEFCA.
I didn't get that, Sasha. You were always on top of you there. Say it again.
So if there is rulemaking that times the requirement of implementing USCDI, then I agree there's another step that could function to say, oh, this this version difference, this version increment of USCDI is larger in terms of the change required and will allow an appropriate amount of chain time for that. But I was under the impression that other structures like the Trusted Exchange Framework had a built-in required time frame for USCDI updates that didn't include an additional step for evaluating their size or readjusting the timeline.
Al, do you have a perspective on that?
I was gonna support what you said, Stephen, about the requirement for when it becomes a rule. That's when the collective burden evaluation is done formally. I mean, it's you know, it's a legal requirement for us to evaluate regulatory impact. And for the next time, so say not version two, but version three, when we come out with a new rule, you know, supposedly, that's when the formal burden evaluation of a new rule comes out, happens. I've got to go back and look at the details of the dependencies between USCDI and say TEFCA or USCDI and the other and the CCDS dependent criteria. I have to go back and look at that and just be really clear on it. I don't want to say the wrong thing about when that requirement would have to be met versus you have the option of meeting the newer version, the version two or the version three, before the new rule comes out. When new rule comes out, you have to do the latest version. Does that make sense? I don't have an answer for you, but I'll get it.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of this written down. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this was all a conversation we had with Steve. So it'd be nice to get in writing what ONC's intent is with regard to that move. I mean, there was a slide, right, that had colored bars on it that tried to speak to it, but, you know, that said that the rules would lag behind, but, you know, by how much and by what criteria? So I think that's what we're getting at, is what are the criteria and how do we assure that what we're asking of, you know, clinicians and industry is, you know, can be managed?
So, the part that I need to get more clarification about that specific question. Maybe I should get clarification on the question itself. But the standards version advancement process allows a vendor to adopt a newer version than in the last rule. until such time as the new rule says now you must use a certain version. This proposed rule comes out. When the proposed rule comes out, there will be some version of a version one of USCDI, and vendors will have 2 years to update and then provide it to their customers from whatever date the finalization is, for example. But in the interim, there's going to be version two and maybe version three and maybe version four before the new rule comes out. And so it would have, through the standard version advancement process, vendors would have the option of adopting this newer version than certified to. And so that could actually allow for a number of additional years until the next rule comes out for the vendors to update a more difficult version advancement, for example.
But my understanding is that, you know, when that new rule comes out, we may have already published USCDI version 4, and the rule that comes out at that time may only call for version 2 or version 3. That was my understanding, was that the rulemaking is not tied in time to the versions.
Well, as the rule is being written, a decision is made about which rule to which version to put in there. And generally,
we're
going to be looking towards as close as to, if there's a version that hasn't been finalized yet, there's a theoretic possibility that you could put into a rule, because the lag time on the rule is so long, it's possible that we could initially write into the rule version 3, and then version 4 comes out, and we either finalize rule version 3 or change it to version 4. But this is all, it's kind of a hypothetical about like which version might go into the next rule. It's really impossible to say how we're going to write the next rule, if we're going to write the next rule, how we're going to write the next rule, and which version it would use. It's really impossible to run that one down, to answer that question with any clarity. There's no certainty about how that would happen down the road for the next version.
It's also not the only factor, because I did look up the TEFCA reference, and TEFCA says that TEF participants would be required to support the newest version 18 months after it's approved by the national coordinator. So even if rulemaking controls what's expected in certification, as Al was describing, the participants in the trusted exchange framework would have a different timeline that isn't variable based on the way it's drafted. At least it says 18 months, period, no matter what the scope of it was.
Thanks for pointing that out, Sasha.
Yeah, let me get to that specific question and to the previously CCDS dependent criteria. Let me get a really clear answer on that and get back with the task force.
Sure. I put the reference in the TEF in the chat.
Thank you.
And so, hello again. Great discussion. Sorry to have missed you. So I guess the sort of circling back to where we were is sort of we were talking about some sort of prioritization process prior to data elements getting into USCDI. And I think, Stephen, you made a great point that our job ought to be to move things into USCDI as quickly as we can and let ONC figure out how best to mitigate the burden on industry, with Al's discussion about sort of that being an explicit part of rulemaking. And I like that formulation. So I think we have sort of on the table is making the complexity of the data classes a standard for prioritization and part of our consideration about getting elements to USCDI. And we can kind of leave it there, I think. So, any more thoughts or comments on this? I think it was a great discussion. And thank you, Al. stepping forward. We go into the next slide. I think we're getting towards the end of our list. Yep, we can go back, I guess. So, okay. And then, Stephen, you asked in the I'm trying to remember what you asked way back, if I can find my notes.
What did I ask?
Yeah, you asked about the complexity of data uses. I think we sort of touched
on
that.
Well, I mean, I think it was more like how are we, what's the process for reviewing and ingesting as a whole large data classes, large new data classes? You know, and social determinants is, you know, I mean, is when social determinants is ready to go, is it going to come forward as a big bolus, or is it going to drip through the process, you know, piece by piece? The conversation that we had with the transplant folks, you know, they've got a bunch of stuff they need. Is that, you know, is that going to come through as sort of a medium size project, or, you know, would some of it end up in version 2 and some of it end up in version 3?
I think it's going to be naturally, like, incremental, because if you look at social determinants of health and you look at what's going on in, like, the SDOs in HL7, they have the Gravity Project, and they're starting with standards for food insecurity, housing, and transportation. And they're standardizing that. And so that those three elements within social determinants of health will probably go through the process more quickly, and then we'll be able to go into USCDI as the data class social determinants of health with those three. And then as other data elements become available, then they can be proposed to add to that data class.
In another version.
Right. Yeah, this is Al. What Christina describes is pretty likely, and I'm aware of the readiness of those three, maybe four or five new, I would say that they're probably going to end up being called data elements. Those each domain may be considered a data element, but I don't know for sure how that's going to be structured. But the readiness of three or four or five of these domains is likely what would be, or some part of that. Would likely be what is proposed for the next, you know, for version 2 of USCDI.
So I have another question of the group. Did we skip the slide on sort of technical maturity? I think, Sasha, you'd raise that, and I'm not sure the slide made it into the deck, unless I was away during that time.
I don't think we talked about that one.
Slide 9. Oh, there. You guys got it.
Ah, okay. So somehow, yeah, okay. So can we talk about this and then, Lauren, go to public comment?
Sure, yeah. We got a few minutes, yep.
Okay. So again, Sasha, you're up. Thank you so much for...
Yeah, so my colleagues and I were looking at the proposals for technical maturity assessment. And we wanted to make a few recommendations. The documentation requirements, to us, the standard of just being available seemed challenging. We thought that the documentation should be sourced from an SDO that was accredited, and then also that the specification should have passed a consensus-based public validating process. That was kind of our first recommendation. The second
That's
was about
clearly a higher bar, right? I mean,
yes,
it's
it
not
would be
unreasonable.
A higher bar.
It's not unreasonable, but it really brings a lot of additional lift with it.
Yeah, which
I mean, our thinking was if we're proposing that, you know, something be rolled out nationwide, in the trusted exchange framework, potentially 18 months in certification, a year or two, that it would be reasonable that it be sourced from an accredited source and be balloted.
Yep.
I think it's reasonable. It's just, it's a shift.
Yeah, and that raises another slide that I think I missed, and that was sort of who's going to do this work, the upfront work. And so that may be our discussion next week. Sasha, can let's go back one.
Oh, yeah. You want me to do the other recommendations quick? So
yeah, go back one slide. There you go.
That was, I think, our first one. The second one was back one more slide.
One more.
Depending on the systems or organizations and sort of their, I don't know, size and representativeness of rolling out nationwide, we could picture cases where testing in 2 to 4 systems was not representative of what it would really mean for this to be deployed nationwide, and more representative testing would be necessary. There's probably other cases where 4 systems or organizations might be very representative of the type of deployment we're expecting, but we were just worried that, again, if we only tested in 2 systems and they weren't representative of what would really take to roll out nationwide, that could leave us in a pickle.
Yeah.
We kind of fed that into our second one, which was around real-world pilots, just to make sure that that was part of the technical maturity assessment.
Okay. Do you have some thoughts on sort of what would – it sounds like you're saying that some data classes – are going to be require less rigorous testing, but you somehow need a certain standard of technical maturity. Have we phrased what that standard is sufficiently?
Well, I think for the testing bullet, I think we want to ensure that the testing is both comprehensive and representative. And okay. So 2 to 4 might not be comprehensive enough or representative enough.
Should we make it elastic language and say number of systems sufficient to, you know, sufficient to provide real world testing?
Yeah, that might be appropriate. Then
just make it instead of 2 to 4, which is pretty arbitrary.
Right. And then if, depending on the use case, if there's more stakeholders involved, there might need to be more people involved in testing just to make sure it's representative of all the stakeholders, for example, whereas it could be flexed based on the need.
Okay. We'll come up with some more language. Again, we're going to get this out to you early so you'll have more time to think about it rather than, you know, last minute. So Lauren, should we go to public comment and then swing back, because we have another slide to go through?
Absolutely. Operator, can we open the public line?
Absolutely. If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay, Terry, I'll let you know if we get any additional comments.
Great. So could we go back to the slide we left? Yes. So I think we're okay with this. Sasha, we'll rewrite it to have it be enough to give confidence that it's being adequately tested. Can we go ahead another slide, please? And this, I think we can add in pretty easily. I think the importance of opportunities for feedback. We just have to be explicit about a process. And then the next slide, I think, is one that was raised at High Tech. And this is an important one, and I think it sort of is beyond, in a sense, US CDI, but Ken and Arian both said, you know, Ken said, the best business model for this would be to sit back, do nothing, let somebody else do all the testing, And when it's ready, approved and ready for deployment, then pick it up and do it, and you'll have no cost. And yet, this is a system that really relies on the goodwill of the vendor community and the provider community working together. So it raises the issue of kind of, is this, if this is a public good that we're building, interoperability, then is there a role for, in a sense, public support for developing the standards and developing the and doing the testing, supporting the testing? So let me throw that out to the group.
I'm going to come down on the side of this is a public good, and where the market does not provide, that's the role of government.
Okay.
Or government, you know, potentially guiding the market, you know, providing incentives, providing support, providing catalysis. Is that a word?
No, I don't know. They're the catalyst. All right.
Oh, I guess to put out another perspective, I actually have more thoughts that it will go the opposite way and that we'll actually have more things coming into the process and trying to be promoted and so forth than we anticipate. So I don't know that this is as much kind of a worry in my mind. I think there's going to be a lot of participation.
Okay. So, you know, and Sasha, you're right. This is really anticipatory anxiety, and we don't really know how the system's going to work. So maybe we just, instead of this, we say something to the effect that just be aware that if priority data items are not advancing, that there may be a role for government to provide incentives, provide convening,
yeah,
other things as needed,
evaluate the process at periodic intervals, right? Like set intervals to say, you know, we're speculating this might be a concern. Let's check in after a certain amount of time and see if this seems to actually be a concern, and then discuss how to address it.
Yeah. Right. I think that's a reasonable approach, just to flag it as possible, worry about it, but not do anything about it.
Yeah, watch and say, okay, we'll take this into our evaluation of the success of the process when we, you know, do our one-year checkpoint or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually, you just raised another point that's not on any slide, and that is, should we propose an evaluation process for this? How would, or at least a framework or things we think ought to happen? Or is that beyond our scope? You know,
well, I don't know what our scope is, but generally I do think it's helpful to periodically evaluate our work and determine if it's appropriately getting us to the outcomes we want or needs adjustment.
All right, so we'll add another slide on that for everyone to review, just sort of we'll mock up an evaluation process. Okay. Well, that's great. And I think, did we hit all the slides? I think we did. Yep. Okay. All right. Dina, do you have parting words of wisdom for us?
Thank you all. Great discussion.
Yeah. No, really, great job. And so we promise you a revised deck. And I guess we're going to ask, do you think, would it help if we drop this into a Google Doc? You know, basically drop the bullets in so it's easier to make comments or suggestions. And then out of the Google Doc, build a deck. Would that be helpful? Rather than just
I'm not sure it's as critical here as in some of our other task forces, just because so much of the interaction happens on the calls. But I mean, Sasha obviously contributed a lot here, and her colleagues. So maybe you'd be best to say.
Just what would work best for our final review, which again, we promise to get to you really early.
I don't know that we have a preference as to format, but certainly I think one thing where all of our stuff is centralized is convenient so that, you know, can solicit input from a variety of experts.
Okay, we'll figure it out, and something will be on a Google Doc or Google Slide or Google something. Great. And thank you all. This is really great work. We're almost there.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lauren, unless there's a public comment, I think we're done.
No, I don't see any comments. Thank you all again. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, you too.
Take care.